Hey, it is Ryan Seacrest here. If you love great games and a little extra excitement to your day, I got something fun for you. Chumba Casino and I have teamed up to create an exclusive online social casino game. It's called Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's fun and free to play, just like all your favorites from Chumba Casino. And every spin brings 10,000 ways to keep the good times going. Check it out and play for free today at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Information discussed in this podcast may be sensitive in nature to some listeners. Listener discretion is advised. They say that many children with autism, especially a high-functioning autism, as Ryan Larson had been diagnosed with, do have a desire for perfectionism. At the very least, they want to be able to do the things that they try to do. If they cannot, they may easily become frustrated or agitated. And that is exactly what happened to 11-year-old Ryan on the morning of May 17th, 2021, while at school. Ryan was in the sixth grade, and he wanted to do things right. And when he couldn't figure out a math problem, he became upset. His teacher allowed him to go to another room to work it out. This would allow Ryan some quiet time and the ability to hopefully reason through the problem and calm himself down. This is a strategy employed by many schools to support children with learning disabilities, remove them from the distractions and the unnecessary noises, and they can often calm their emotions and complete their work. At 11:55 a.m. on May 17th, 2021, Ryan was still in that room working on his math when the teacher supervising him had to leave. There was a replacement teacher on the way, but they were running late. At 12:05 p.m., just 10 minutes later, the new teacher arrived to an empty classroom. Ryan wasn't in there. Searches around the school, both inside and outside, commenced, but there were no signs of Ryan. This wasn't unusual for Ryan. In fact, he had done this before. But after 20 minutes of searching, the school called his mother and then called 911. 11-year-old Ryan had vanished. Where is Ryan D. Larson? Hello, and welcome back to the Where Are They podcast and another unsolved missing persons case. Now, you may have seen Ryan Larson's missing person flyers come across your social media at some point. If you are from the La Vista, Nebraska area, you have surely heard of Ryan Larson. But there are so many reasons to keep his case out there. First, and most importantly, Ryan is still missing. He is still out there somewhere. Second, his disappearance calls into question some policies and procedures that schools have adopted to educate autistic children while they are under their care. And third, it brings up the discussion of knowing what to do when an autistic child goes missing, and they will. Autistic children especially tend to wander off or even run off if confronted with something that they perceive as trouble, perhaps loud noises, or maybe they're in the presence of too many strangers. Or in the case of Ryan, the frustration they feel when they cannot complete a task like they want to. If you are here listening to Ryan's story today, thank you so much. Remember, the links for any relevant sources or information can always be found in the show notes, as well as all of our contact information. We always welcome thoughts and feedback from you, and of course, any case suggestions that you might have also. I do want to welcome our newest Patreon members, Haley and Maida. Thank you so much for joining us over on Patreon and supporting what we do. Your support allows us to pay it forward and to continue helping others as well. We will be making a donation in Ryan's honor to Project Lifesaver. I will link Project Lifesaver in the notes for more info, but Essentially, they are a nonprofit organization that helps supply those in need with GPS tracking monitors. If you have an at-risk loved one, someone perhaps prone to wandering off, they can offer bracelets or ankle monitors that can be worn to help locate them in the event they disappear. That, of course, is a very general statement about what they do, so I do encourage you to check out their website and see everything that they have to offer and how you can even possibly get involved and help. Now let's get into the reason we are all here. Let's talk about Ryan Larson. Ryan Larson was born on June 8, 2009 to his mom, Tammy. His mom would raise him as a single mother in La Vista, Nebraska. Ryan also had three older sisters, and one of his favorite things to do as he grew up was to play pranks on them. They took it in stride because they adored their little brother. They adored Ryan. At a very young age, Ryan was diagnosed with high-functioning autism, Tourette's syndrome, and epilepsy. In light of his medical struggles, however, Ryan was a happy-go-lucky kind of boy. He enjoyed playing with matchbox cars, his little army men toys, and Legos. Ryan was known to be talkative around those people that he knew well, but around strangers, he would often clam up. He is described as verbal, but nonverbal around people he didn't know. Ryan's family was a close-knit family. His older sisters, even after they moved out of the house, saw Ryan regularly and they felt protective of him, especially after learning that he was getting bullied at school. It broke their hearts, but they stood up for him and they protected him as best as they could. Despite these social issues Ryan now had to deal with, he was still usually a happy and friendly boy. The disappearance. Ryan woke up as usual for school on May 17th, 2021. He ate breakfast and his mom drove him to school. On the way, Ryan chatted excitedly about a surprise present they were getting for a friend out of state. They would be sending this friend clues as to what the present was, and Ryan was thrilled. His mom promised him they'd start working on the clues that evening. Ryan jumped out of the car and ran towards the school as he did every morning. Ryan, a sixth grader at La Vista Elementary School, waved goodbye to his mom and then disappeared through the school doors. Later that morning, Ryan's class was working on math and Ryan was struggling. He became particularly frustrated at not being able to do some of the work and he was quite upset. Now, with Ryan's learning disabilities, part of the plan was to put him in a quiet room where he could focus and calm down when he encountered these type of moments. So Ryan went into another room with a teacher supervising him and worked on his math. He seemed to calm down and was working diligently when the teacher had to leave the room. It was 11:55 a.m. and the replacement teacher hadn't yet arrived. Believing that the next teacher would be walking in any minute and Ryan was busy working, the teacher left the classroom. The replacement teacher walked in 10 minutes later, around 12:05 p.m., and found an empty classroom. They could see where Ryan had been seated and was working, but there was no sign of Ryan. A search of the classroom turned up no sign of the young boy either. Had he gone back to his other classroom? No, Ryan wasn't there. Was he in one of the restrooms? Nope, no Ryan there either. Had he gone outside? A quick check of the area turned up no signs of Ryan. The school had to make the difficult call to Ryan's mother at 12:27 p.m. Now, Ryan had now been missing, or at least they knew that he had been missing, since 12:05, about 22 minutes. But Ryan was last seen at 11:55, so 32 minutes prior. Now, most parents would be quite alarmed to get such a call from their child's school, but Tammy Larson had been through this before. The school advised that they would be calling 911, and Tammy said she was on her way. Ryan had done this a few times before. In fact, some of the local officers at the police station knew Ryan because of this. Tammy called to speak to one of the officers that she knew, and he advised her to go home first, see if maybe Ryan had gone there, and if not, then to head up to the school. which is exactly what Tammy did. But Ryan wasn't at home. There was no sign that he had been there, and she didn't see him anywhere around the home. So she raced up to the school where the search for Ryan would officially begin. Ryan Larson had disappeared. The search and investigation. Since Ryan was only 11 and he was considered at risk, the search for him began right away. The police, to their credit, showed up to the school within 5 minutes of the 911 call. First, everyone checked everywhere they could think of inside and right outside of the school. Ryan was known to find small spaces and hide, especially when he was upset or anxious. Perhaps he was just hiding somewhere. The search outside the school started spanning out around. Neighbors became aware of his disappearance, and the public was urged to check their doorbell cameras and any of their outdoor spaces, such as sheds or any type of places that a child might be able to hide. I'm sure at first, everyone thought they'd find Ryan hiding somewhere and that everything would be okay. However, as time ticked by, with no signs of Ryan, the panic began to grow. Finally, a sighting came into authorities that seemed certain to be Ryan. At 1:45 p.m., someone said they saw Ryan walking around the Southfield Apartments, where he happened to live, and it was only 2 blocks from the school. He was seen holding an umbrella. There was never any question about this umbrella, but I've often wondered how he obtained it. Did he take it from the school with him when he left? Or had he gone to his apartment to grab it? Or had he obtained it from somewhere else? Perhaps it wasn't even his to begin with. But there was some CCTV footage to verify that Ryan was in the area. That would be the only CCTV footage that authorities have noted, although they have also said they are not releasing it publicly. There is much speculation as to why they wouldn't release that, but as of today, they have not released that video. So Ryan was now last seen at 1:45 p.m., almost 2 hours after he left school. His mother had been alerted at almost 12:30, and she had left work and went home right away. Police had also been notified at that time. So where had Ryan been during those 2 hours? His mother had stated that she checked the home and he hadn't been there, and searchers had already begun scouring the area, but Ryan hadn't been seen. Had he found a place to maybe hide for that 2 hours? Why didn't anyone see him? As the public became aware of Ryan's disappearance, everyone in the community was on the lookout for him. Searches expanded to nearby parks and areas that Ryan was known to enjoy, such as Walnut Creek Park, but still there were no signs of Ryan. Search canines were brought in, and while it was noted that they seemed to pick up some scents believed to possibly be Ryan's, they were unable to find the boy or any of his belongings. Neighboring agencies eventually also came in to help, as did the FBI and NCMEC, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. They would send representatives to aid in the search, bringing a special task force of such who were experienced in searching for children with autism and the places that they may go and hide. It was all hands on deck in the search for Ryan. At least in the beginning. He simply seemed to vanish into thin air. About 6 weeks after he disappeared, Ryan's umbrella was found behind a dumpster at the Southfield apartment complex. This would be the only clue found in the search for Ryan. But how did the umbrella get there? Did Ryan put it there, or did someone else? Had someone else found it? Had it been there the entire time he was missing? And if so, why didn't searchers find it earlier? That area was said to be searched thoroughly after May 17th when Ryan was last seen. The discovery of the umbrella did not lead to any additional information as to Ryan's whereabouts. Authorities did consider places that Ryan might have gone to hide and wondered if he possibly crawled into a dumpster. Dumpsters around that entire area were searched immediately, Volunteers said that they even had people jumping in the dumpsters and rummaging through them. Nothing was found. Weeks later, detectives took their search a step further and began searching landfills where the trash from those local dumpsters were taken. It seemed a long shot, but anything is a possibility at this point. The police chief said that within the first week, they had GPS tracking on the trash that was in the apartment complex dumpster. They also discussed with experts on the best ways to approach landfill searches. To search an entire section of landfill, they determined would take 78 months with 20 people working 5 days a week. Detectives said they tried to narrow their focus on where the trash would have ended up to do some preliminary searches. They were also able to find video of the trash truck emptying the dumpster, but did not see anything suspicious that may have led them to believe that Ryan had been inside that dumpster. All in all, nothing was ever found from the landfill searches or the dumpsters in and around Ryan's home. La Vista, Nebraska. La Vista, Nebraska is known as a family-friendly town, a suburb of Omaha, with a population of just around 16,000 residents. Autistic children are known to be drawn to water, so water sources around that area were looked at closely. Walnut Creek Recreation Area was searched, as this was an area that Ryan was known to frequent with his family and an area that he known to really enjoy. The park itself is about 6 miles from Ryan's school in La Vista, and the park covers over 400 acres, about 100 acres of which is a lake. They brought in teams of professional search and rescue members, as well as volunteers, combed through the entire area, including water searches, and found no signs of Ryan. Now, there aren't many other water sources in the vicinity. Not a lot, anyway. There's some small ponds and there's some creeks. But again, all local water sources were looked at, as autistic children are known to be drawn to water, and they found no signs of Ryan. Ryan was last seen around the Southfield Apartments complex. This is just 2 blocks away from his school, so he easily could have walked out of school and walked over to the apartments. He probably knew that area quite well also. Now, that entire surrounding area seems to be mostly residential and light business, some restaurants and some small stores. It's actually quite unusual that he hadn't been seen by anyone else during this whole day. La Vista Central Park is near there, with a pond. But I'd have to think that area was heavily searched and focused on, seeing as its proximity to the apartments was so close. And, again, another area that Ryan had to be quite familiar with. The La Vista crime rating is considered moderately high, according to NeighborhoodScout.com, although the majority of that crime is related to property crimes. Statistics for violent crimes are lower than average. But, of course, regardless of what statistics show, crime can happen anywhere to anybody. Was Ryan possibly the victim of some type of crime? Had a crime even been committed? Many do have to wonder, seeing as this 11-year-old boy seemed to vanish into thin air. The court cases. On January 24th, 2023, Tammy Larson filed to have Ryan declared legally dead so that she could bring a wrongful death claim against the Papillon La Vista Community School District. 3 months later, in April of 2023, this was denied, stating that the case didn't meet the criteria and that a person must wait 5 years before declaring a missing person deceased, unless there was substantial evidence that they were no longer alive. This would mean that Tammy Larson can file to have Ryan declared deceased in May of 2026 and not before. On May 12, 2023, Tammy and her attorneys changed their strategy and they filed a case with the federal courts. They asked for money damages and punitive damages, alleging that the school system violated the ADA, the American Disabilities Act, the Rehabilitation Act, the IDEA, and the 14th Amendment by leaving Ryan unsupervised and failing to stop him from leaving the school that day. That case would also be dismissed in November of 2023, basically for lack of evidence showing that the school system did anything wrong. In March of 2024, Tammy and her attorneys filed a lawsuit against the state, alleging negligent supervision of Ryan, negligent infliction of emotional distress on Tammy, and unspecified damages. That lawsuit would also be dismissed. Tammy, along with the support of her family and her attorneys, had filed four separate lawsuits, with all of them being dismissed. I am curious to know your thoughts on this. Do you think the school holds any liability in Ryan's disappearance? Should they be held accountable? Were they responsible? Or is his disappearance that day an act that could not have been foreseen or prevented, at least by the school system? Definitely let me know your thoughts on this. Project Lifesaver. Ryan had been approved for a Project Lifesaver device. This is a device that can be worn, a device that contains a GPS tracking system and is often used for at-risk individuals. With Ryan's history of wandering off, he definitely fit the criteria and he qualified for one of these GPS monitors. The only problem was that this 11-year-old boy didn't like wearing it and he often took it off or tried to remove it. As time went on, his mother stopped forcing him to wear it. But I do want to mention it and the goal of Project Lifesaver because I think they do have the ability to help so many people. A little background on Project Lifesaver. This is coming directly from their website, projectlifesaver.org. Project Lifesaver is a national search and rescue program designed to help quickly locate individuals who are prone to wandering due to cognitive conditions, conditions like autism spectrum disorder, Alzheimer's or other dementias, Down syndrome, traumatic brain injury, or developmental disabilities. It was founded in 1999 by the Chesapeake, Virginia Sheriff's Office and is now active in over 1,600 agencies across the U.S., Canada, and Australia. Participants wear a small transmitter on the wrist or the ankle. It's about the size of a watch. This transmitter emits a unique signal every second, 24/7. If the person goes missing, trained first responders use mobile receivers and directional antennas to track the signal. The average recovery time for someone who does go missing with one of these monitors is under 30 minutes compared to hours or days with conventional searches. Families interested in these devices can typically apply through the local sheriff's office or a public safety agency. A short interview and a consent form are usually all that is required. This equipment does cost about $300 to $400 to purchase outright. That's for the transmitter, the batteries, the wristband. And there is a monthly maintenance fee for battery and band replacements that's also estimated to be around $10 to $15. However, many departments offer subsidies to cover the full cost, either through grants or donations for families in need. Now, you might be wondering why. Why not just give these people something like an Apple AirTag or put an Apple AirTag in their pocket? Well, an Apple AirTag is completely different technology. It works on Bluetooth signal and the Apple system. Project Lifesaver uses radio frequencies. This means that Project Lifesaver works anywhere. If there's no cell service, it doesn't matter. It's still working and it will still give an exact location. An AirTag can be compromised by weather or even tampered with from an individual, but Project Lifesaver cannot be. Even though Ryan was not wearing his Project Lifesaver, the work the company is doing to distribute these throughout the country to those in need, throughout the world, really, is admirable. As I mentioned, I'll link the website in the show notes for you. There's a lot more information on there. If you or a loved one may be in need of something like this, go check them out. There's also an option to make a donation or see what else you can do to help. We will be making a donation from the podcast in honor of Ryan. I'm very curious to know your thoughts on the disappearance of Ryan Larson. What do you think happened here? Do you think the school holds any responsibility? Do you think he likely wandered off and became lost or injured? Or is something or someone else at play here? Could Ryan still be out there? Did he hide himself in such a spot that he has never been found? Or is it possible that someone took him away from the area? Ryan Larson is described as a Caucasian male standing 5'8" tall, weighing around 125 pounds when he was last seen. He was 11 years old, almost 12, when he disappeared. He was last known to be near the Southfield apartment complex in La Vista, Nebraska. Ryan was wearing a black and gray zippered hooded sweatshirt with orange lining inside the hood, an Old Navy shirt, blue jeans, and black New Balance sneakers. It's important to remember that Ryan is known to be nonverbal with strangers and has a tendency to hide in small places. Anyone with any information at all on Ryan Larson is asked to contact the La Vista Police Department at 402-331-1582. Thank you for listening to Ryan's story today and for supporting our show and our mission, which is to keep sharing these cases with you. If you've made it this far and can appreciate the coverage of these unsolved cases, please consider leaving us a 5-star review on your podcast platform. It really, really does help these cases get more exposure. Please make sure you're following us over on the socials as well. If we do have any news or any updates, it will generally be posted there first. We do try to keep up with all of the cases that we have covered over the years, and as new updates come in, we will usually post them. You can find the Where Are They podcast on Facebook, Instagram, X, and YouTube. All of those links will be in the show notes, or you can always just search for the Where Are They podcast. If you do have a case suggestion for me, please reach out on any of the socials or email me anytime at canwefindthem@gmail.com. Specifically, those cases that need more exposure, either because they haven't had any, they haven't had enough, or perhaps media coverage has slowed down and they are still missing. We can keep pushing for answers. Again, a huge welcome to Haley and Maida for joining us over on Patreon and supporting our show. You can find all of our episodes over there, ad-free, as well as some bonus episodes every month as well. The link to our Patreon is in the notes, and supporting our show starts at just $3 a month. You can also join as a free member if you aren't sure, or if you just want to receive some of the special alerts that we put up over there as well. If you are looking for any past episodes or additional missing person case write-ups, visit our website at wherearethepodcast.com. Thank you again for tuning in today and listening to Ryan's story. Let's hope we have answers on his case very soon. And please continue to keep his mom and his sisters in your thoughts. If you'd like to further support the family, there is a Facebook group set up, Help Find Ryan Larson. Please go follow the group, show your support, and watch for any updates on his story over there as well. We will be back again very soon with another unsolved missing persons story. And until then, stay safe and hug your loved ones.
Looking for a little Hollywood-style fun? Check out Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways exclusively at Chumba Casino. There's 10,000 ways to play. Get spinning for free at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.